This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Tan Chung Han, and with me is Brian Fernandez. You're tuned into Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Today we're going to talk about getting your portfolio ready for 2018. And this morning we welcome Steve Lim, Chief Learning Officer at Affin Hwang Asset Management. Good to have you back on the program again, Steve.
Hi, good morning.
Morning. All right. So, getting your portfolio ready for 2018. I guess first things first, are there substantial differences that we have to make note of for 2018 versus, say, 2017?
It shouldn't be much difference because the portfolio allocation is merely a process. It is dynamic, but I guess let me just backtrack a little bit.
Sure.
Essentially, regards to managing a portfolio, having your financial objectives set, there are two methods of doing it. One is, if you're very young, okay, you should start investing very, very early, start accumulating, and probably allocate a small portion or a bigger portion of your savings. Use time and time value of money and compounded return to help you to accumulate to achieve a financial objective very distant into the future, say 10, 20, 30 years.
And also you can, because if you start younger, your appetite for risk can be higher, correct?
Precisely. Another thing that I want to highlight is I personally think from my interaction with younger people or even older people, the younger generations are a little bit too risk-averse. Their parents probably got bitten by get-rich-quick scheme or...
Or maybe even the 98 financial crisis, maybe.
Yeah.
But Steve, that's surprising because one of the things that we've had problems with is people not putting money into correct investment schemes. They're looking at all these get-rich-quick schemes as a way to literally get rich quick.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that your observation is that young people tend to be risk-averse.
They're risk-averse in the sense that they are staying away from proper, say, equity investment.
Mm.
They rather put their money in some dubious scheme without knowing the risk involved. And all these dubious schemes typically promises a return. They promise a return or guarantee a return, which it's not quite possible. Yeah.
But then wouldn't, I guess, the other side of the coin imply that because these younger people are just starting out, they may not have the extra funds to invest, right? So given those kind of constraints, do you have a rule of thumb as to how much they should start setting aside, say, based on net pay?
They should have easily about 10%. I mean, you got to start with something like 10%. Otherwise, it will probably be too small.
So give us an idea about the asset mix then. So from this 10% that you set aside, how much should be in stocks? How much should be in bonds? Right? You know, what's the allocation here?
Okay, I just give you a scenario. If I were to save 300 ringgit a month, okay, that's assuming I've got X amount of salary minus everything, I've got 300 bucks. 300 ringgit, you have to accumulate and put everything into an equity fund for, say, 30 years. Okay, say I start off at 25, I want to retire at 55. This 300 ringgit a month at a 12% equity return, okay, will bring you to a million.
Wow. Okay,
a lot of people have not looked at it carefully. And I mentioned this to many people, and they told me, where do you get 12% return? I mean, it's not easy. Yes, it's not easy, but it's not impossible. If you look at S&P 500, if you look at the, say, Hong Kong Stock Exchange, other exchanges, even our flagship fund, over the last 17 years have done something like 14-15% per annum. So, and they actually complain, okay, this is equity fund, I put my money in, I could actually lose it. But you're spreading your risk over 30 years. Bike size, 300 a month, I really see what kind, I don't see how big the risk can be.
All right, and you dollar cost average then
exactly,
over that period.
Exactly,
All right, but then, so you've got a set allocation for equities, perhaps bonds, but what about ensuring that you have sufficient cash or liquid assets in case of an emergency, right? Because if you invest in some of these funds or some of these stocks, it may not be as liquid, right? So how much of a buffer should people have?
Typically, the yardstick should be about 6 months of your salary.
That's cash. A lot.
Yeah, I know.
So what takes precedence then? This buffer, make sure you've got 6 months, then invest in equities or do it concurrently? What's the appropriate strategy here?
I would say time and time wait for no man. So you should start building this investment scheme to, say, 6 months and probably use this amount as your buffer later when you have reached the target.
And Steve, we've been talking about young people in terms of their investment strategies, but what happens if you're in your 40s and 50s? Your time horizons are a lot shorter. How do we look at allocating our assets when we're in this age group?
I was coming to that. The first method is accumulate over a very, very long term, very small bite size every month. Okay. The second methods are for people with substantial wealth or, you know, and they probably have to look at the pool of assets they have and asset allocated according to their risk profile.
Hmm.
Okay. When it comes to risk profile, I just want to introduce the concept of risk capability and risk tolerance. You could be very tolerant of risk, but you're not capable to take risks. So I think each and every individual, they would have to ask themselves, okay, I'm in my 40s, I'm still working, so my ability to take risks is small. So my portfolio can be a little bit more risky, a little bit more riskier than, say, somebody in their 40s and they're not working and that's all they have, you know. Mm. So you can be very capable in risk, as in you can take a lot of risk because you have substantial assets and you're very young, but you're very, very not tolerant of risk.
Okay.
You're just very, very scared of taking risks. That is also a problem.
So, say, given the profile of a listener right now who may be in their 40s and 50s, may not have substantial wealth, but have that shorter runway as well, what can they do? Because, you know, it's not uncommon. We actually have a colleague who actually saw himself go through some financial troubles in his 40s and managed to come back around, right? So, for those with less substantial wealth, with a shorter runway, what's your advice to them?
It would have to be I probably
aggressive.
I would probably classify them as moderate risk.
Okay.
They don't want to put everything in the FD, and it's not going to solve the problem.
And Steve, also, because in this age group, in the 40s and 50s, retirement starts to play in their minds a lot.
Yep.
Malaysians aren't saving enough for retirements. You know, 75% of people don't have enough money to retire, basically, in Malaysia. So do we then, instead of that saving that 10% of our incomes, really start to look at a bigger portion if you're in your 40s and 50s?
Absolutely, yeah. If you are in 40s and 50s, I would have to assume that their incomes is a lot higher than when they're in 20s. So the saving portion should be a lot larger than the 10%.
So in other words, then you would say that to repair, let's just say they've not been saving enough. So this retirement is looming in 10 years or maybe in 15 years. They've not been saving enough. What they probably then need to do is, if they need to save, given their current financial position in terms of their salary, the only way to save more is to actually spend less.
Either that or push that goalpost back further. Have fun trying to retire by 55 then.
Right.
Now, this is not something that's just passive, right? You can just invest your money and then hands off, right? It's something you have to continually revisit. Am I correct?
Revisit, rebalance.
And how often and what do you recommend there?
Typically, if you see the asset allocation for an individual, doesn't really change much. Unless there are substantial changes in the financial circumstances of a person. The person got married, got divorced, or he or she lost a breadwinner in a family. Only these kind of more adverse circumstances would bring about a change in asset allocation. But typically, once we set a asset allocation for, say, somebody in their 40s, to be moderate, so you see the portfolio being pretty balanced. I would say maybe 30% in stocks, 30% in bonds, the rest in cash, you know, the kind of things that would generate a return that's slightly higher than FDs, probably in the tune of 5 to 8%.
Okay. Steve, a lot of people tend to, and especially in Malaysia and lots of countries in Asia as well, tend to see property as that safe asset to have in their portfolio. In fact, most people who have assets tend to be heavily invested in property as opposed to equities or bonds.
Mm.
Now, what's your thought of it in terms of your overall asset allocation from a wealth perspective? What should property perhaps be?
It's very difficult to look at a portion of property versus the entire portfolio because property is usually geared.
Mm.
Okay, it's usually geared. And because of the gearing, we can actually take on more investment in properties. If you look at the subprime crisis in 2008, okay, even the rating agency thought the U.S. market is going to go on forever. Okay, but that's not the case. I mean, we have seen the property market slowing down in the last couple of years. It may pick up again. But investors should not have the idea that if you buy a property, it is definitely going to go up in the future. I would say we can have your own house, owner-occupied property, and probably buy some more if you have extra cash. But it shouldn't be too overly loaded in just one asset class. The other thing about property is extremely illiquid. Especially in a very slow market right now, you try to unload your 800,000 apartment in a obscure location.
800,000? Maybe less than 500,000. Like, Steve, what are you talking about?
So
right.
It's going to be tough. So it's illiquid. And the only thing you can probably do is to try to remortgage to the bank to take the money out.
So diversification, a very important component of your investment strategy. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll get more investment tips from Steve Lim, Chief Learning Officer with Affin Hwang Asset Management, as we talk about getting your portfolio ready for 2018. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Thanks for staying with us on Ringgit and Cents, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Han, and with me, Brian, and in the studio also, Steve Lim, Chief Learning Officer with Affin Hwang Asset Management. Now, Steve, before the break, we left off about at the importance of diversification. Mm-hmm. What are some concrete steps that we can take when it comes to either diversifying or rebalancing our portfolios?
If you hail Uber, you will have a destination to go to. A lot of us, probably because of work, because of family and all that, we probably lost track of where we want to be financially. I hope that everybody has got the objective, the long-term financial objective, respect to retirement, respect to whether they want to own a house, respect to whether they want to own a very fast car in the future. Once you have the financial objective, step one, you should break that very big objective into smaller parts, into, say, a 5 years or 3 years or yearly kind of goals. And after you have done that, you probably just want to look at step three, how much cash should I maintain in that grander scheme of things? Okay, all my assets, how many percent of cash I want to be? Because that cash portion will be the most stable of your assets. Okay, whether the market is swinging up and down, the cash portion would maintain.
And it'll be liquid as well.
Yeah, it'll be liquid. Then after you've decided how much cash you want to maintain, you probably want to look at the moderate and risky portion of your portfolio. You have got stocks, you have got bonds, you have got some alternative investment and all that. You just want to look at the portion of that moderate to risky assets versus your cash. Okay, that is going to swing.
Mm.
Okay, after you've done that, you probably want to zero in to the individual components, let's say a unit trust or a stocks or a bond fund that you have bought last year, okay, and see whether it has done what it is supposed to do.
Mm.
If it hasn't, okay, it's probably about time you call up your financial advisor or banker to ask them to maybe give you a clearer direction. Yeah.
So just to recap, step one, set a long-term objective. Step two, break it down into smaller steps. Step three, make sure you've got cash buffers. Yeah. Step four, determine your risk appetite, right, and moderate to riskier assets. And then last but not least,
a portion of that to your overall portfolio.
And step five, you know, check on the performance of your investments.
Yeah. Okay. And see if your individual performance is contributing to achieving at least your short term, say 1 year goal.
Steve, in general, in terms of a cash portion, would you recommend, because of the volatility in currencies, it seems riskier that if we put all our assets, all our cash positions, for example, just in ringgit. What are your thoughts in terms of diversifying the risk even on the cash portion?
I would look at it from a needs perspective. Say if I intend to send my kids to Australia or US to study, I think it's always smart to hedge that portion of your assets at least. If you intend to buy a property in Singapore, you intend to buy a property in Australia, I think it makes sense to diversify away. But beyond that, I guess it's a personal choice. A lot of us are still staying here. We're still earning ringgit. We're still spending ringgit. Unless there is a very strong incentive to bring it out, most of us will just keep it in ringgit.
But what about, broadly speaking, you know, the virtues of investing abroad versus investing domestically, right? Should there be a proportion of amount that should be invested abroad? And if so, what do you recommend?
The proportion would be very much dependent on the risk profile of the person. I would say it's always good to diversify away from not just ringgit. I mean, if you have too much US dollars, you may get hit, like US dollars has been pretty weak lately. Mm-hmm. So we as fund manager, we always advocate having a very balanced exposure in the major currencies.
So, Steve, what happens when we've re-examined our portfolio and we realize that perhaps we have a portfolio that's perhaps too much risk compared to what our actual appetite is? What should we do then?
You should sell the risky assets and get into the more moderate ones. You just tweak the risk profile of your portfolio to be in line with your risk tolerance.
So more moderate being what? Bonds, unit trusts, that
income,
sort of stuff?
Income.
Okay.
Yeah, I just want to correct you, Han. A lot of people, when they mention unit trust, they mention it as an asset class. Okay, unit trust is not asset class. It's a vehicle.
Right.
So when it's mentioned, the unit trust can be holding cash, can be holding a bond unit trust, or a stock. So try to look at unit trust as a vehicle rather than an asset class. Otherwise, your asset allocation will be misaligned.
I mean, because also recognizing that unit trusts are often a basket, right? Depending on your risk profile. Yeah. So don't look at it as an asset class, but look at it as a vehicle.
Yeah.
Got it. Point taken. So, Steve, you know, as we make these decisions about our portfolios, right? Very often, you know, I'm sure our listeners and investors are confronted with a lot of noise. And by noise, I mean, you know, some get-rich-quick schemes, you know, even cryptocurrencies, ICOs, etc., right? There are so many competing interests. Mm. How do you, you know, manage, you know, being able to separate the noise and focus on the fundamentals and your objectives?
When investors are confronted with investment proposals and all that, they always ask one question. Is it too good to be true? If it is too good to be true, very likely it is not true. Okay. Mm. For instance, the gold scheme, it was very popular a few years ago.
The Geneva Gold, I think.
Geneva Gold that was being outlawed. They were like paying 2% per month, which translates to 24% a year, guaranteed. So who is going to guarantee it? You know, it just doesn't make sense.
Mm.
Anything that is guaranteed, even NFT is not like 100% guaranteed, right? It's only guaranteed to the PIDM's portion of 250,000. Mm. Okay, so if somebody's peddling products guaranteeing certain return that's way beyond the FD rates, then you have got all reasons to examine it a lot closer.
Steve, yeah. Given the current scenario where we've had an equities run-up in the last 12 months, yep. a significant global run-up, should I, as an investor, be concerned if I'm heavily invested in equities?
You should be concerned to the extent of your portfolio. Say, if you're supposed to do 50 stocks and 50 bonds, and because of last year's rally, your stocks-to-bond portion has grown to 60-40, then as a discipline, you should adjust that 60 back to 50, okay, regardless of where the market is. Mm. That is the discipline as an asset allocator.
So, yeah, there's got to be some level of active participation, right? Not just plunking your money
and
walking away.
Not too regularly, but probably at least annually.
All right, with the little time that we have left, Steve, so what is your one final message for listeners right now? You know, what is the key message that they need to know in terms of getting their portfolio ready for 2018?
Stick to your strategy that you have set forth from the beginning. Revisit it probably once a year. Unless there are major changes in your financial circumstances as an individual, don't sway too much. Don't meddle too much with it. If you have done a very good job in assessing your own risk, looking at the instruments that will get you the return and all that, you should just stick to your plan, yeah, without meddling too much with it.
Stick to your plan for 2018. Got it. Thank you so much for your time and your insights. That was Steve Lim, Chief Learning Officer with Affin Hwang Asset Management. I'm Tan Chung Han, and with me, Brian Fernandez. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Ringgit & Sense. Stay tuned right here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.